Coming up, author Margaret Atwood joins Amber and I to talk about technology, security, and her new project, Fanato. Plus, Yammer's going the way of Skype, sort of, and Twitter's expanding their waistline. All that and add video to your LinkedIn profile on the Social Hour.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for the Social Hour is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur, episode 66, recorded Friday, June 15th, 2012. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by Ford, featuring the My Ford mobile smartphone app for electric vehicles. The My Ford mobile app makes the electric driving experience fun and efficient. Learn more about Ford electric vehicle technologies at Ford.com/technology. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of The Social Hour. It is episode 66, and from Petaluma, world headquarters of Twit, I am Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur from Toronto, Ontario, Canada, which I think we decided was definitely going to be the Canadian headquarters since I'm the only Twit member who lives in Canada.
Indeed. Amber, you're very 8-bitty today for anybody who's watching the video stream or watching the downloaded video of our show. I don't know why that is, but you look kind of cool as like a 8-bit character.
All right. I like it. You know, just switching it up now and again, Sarah, you can never trust technology. That's a lesson we've learned, I think, over time.
Exactly. So let's get right into it. I'm very excited about our guest today, which, Amber, you somehow made this happen at the last minute. We didn't even think we were going to have a guest today.
I know. Really exciting. I have been a fan of Margaret Atwood's for quite a few years now, and I follow her on Twitter and have become friends with her and love all of her tweets and everything she puts out there. She's always working on really interesting projects, and I was really excited yesterday when she talked about a project that she is working on called Fanato, and it fits perfectly with the Social Hour because there are so many different elements that we talk about on the show, from crowdfunding to building communities to connecting with people over technology, and we are just very lucky to have Margaret Atwood here on Skype video, who's joining us to talk about it. Thanks so much, Margaret, for joining the show.
Pleasure.
So tell us a little bit about what Fanato is. Obviously, we could talk about your long list of poetry, your books, your life, really. I mean, your bio is very overwhelming. But what is Fanato? I am new to this.
What can I say? I'm old.
So tell us a little bit about what Fanato is.
Okay, so Fanato, here are you and I. We're talking, I'm in Toronto and you're in Petaluma. So imagine if I had just brought out a new music album, if I had just brought out a new book, if I were a graphic artist, if I were any of those kinds of people who might want to talk to other people and present something, I could do it over a video connect like this one, and I can have a second screen beside me on which you would appear, or somebody interviewing me such as Amber would appear, and we could do all of that, and I could present whatever it was I was presenting, and then I could sign remotely anything digital, such as a poster, a book cover, an album cover, a video game cover, any of those kinds of things, and I could send that to you, and I could also sign physical things, anything flat. We don't do stomachs. I think we might get sued if we did that and something went wrong. But we can do either one, physical or digital. So all of that gets web streamed. It also gets archived, and you could get a video clip of whatever it was that we talked about together. So you would get the memento, and you would also get the part when you're doing a physical presentation, people say, can I have a picture with you? You know that part? And then they say, I don't know how to work this camera. Then there's a pause. Then they say, the picture didn't take. Well, all of that, we can do just as we're doing now with you, Amber, except that you would be on the same level in the same screen as I am. And you can also meet up with other people who have attended the same event, and you can chat with them in text or in person. You can make their acquaintance. So it's also it's a network, it's a community, and it is more especially a way of creators promoting their work, connecting with fans, and being able to monetize it over the web.
Now, one of the interesting things about this project, it's not as though this community exists right now for consumers. And in fact, you've gone an interesting route, something that we've talked about before on the Social Hour, to get this project up and running, which is through crowdfunding. Could you talk a little bit about why you decided to go that route and what you find interesting about that?
Well, first of all, it's a litmus test. In other words, if not enough people like this idea, then I will not pursue it any further. If enough people like this idea, then it means that it's a good idea for people out there. They actually want to do this. They want to have the ability to do this. And the roots of this go way back to before there were e-books. We originally developed the remote signing, which people had been trying to do since the 19th century. They originally tried to do it with the telegraph. We actually managed to do that with biometrically accurate, legally verifiable handwriting on paper objects. And that was only about 6 years ago. And why we did that was that we wanted to be able to take people to communities and to fans that otherwise would never be able to experience that. And we also wanted to take people who couldn't travel or didn't want to travel for some reason. We wanted to be able to make it so that they could be in distant, remote places, talk to their fans, and sign things for them. Norman Mailer, for instance, made his last public appearance at the Edinburgh Book Festival, except that he was in his living room in the United States. And he made a great hit amongst the Scots. And once he realized that he had, 700 enraptured Scots looking at him, he burst into full Normanhood. Then he signed their books. Marilyn French similarly appeared at the London Book Fair. Alice Munro, who doesn't travel in that way, was able to connect with a large number of readers. But now we can webcast, which we couldn't do then. And now we can sign e-objects, which we couldn't do then.
I know that for authors, book tours, book signings, having to hit a bunch of cities and make sure that you're doing book readings, even in multiple places on the same day, can be very grueling. Is this why this approach to connecting with fans and being able to interact with them, sign things, take pictures of them was born?
That too. You can do all of that if you want to, but remember, you will only be sent to a limited number of places on such a tour. So it's the people off to the side who never get that. And North America is actually a very big place. In fact, the world is a very big place. I just did a remote event from North America to Sweden. And I wouldn't have been able to actually go there because I didn't have time, but I was on a screen. It was in connection with a film, and I was able to take questions from the audience, and they were able to talk to me. And with this new technology, I then would have been able to sign things for them. So it's a way of broadening out, interacting with people in communities where you ordinarily might not be able to go, either for time constraints or for physical constraints, or because nobody's going to send you there. Mm-hmm. For instance, I have a very lovely Iranian publisher. Am I going to get on a plane tomorrow and go to Iran? No, not today. But with this, I could. And I could go, in fact, to a number of different countries. I'm about to work with an Egyptian translator. And originally it appeared that he wasn't going to be able to get a visa. And had he not been able to do that, we would have been able to connect and work on the translation over video. So it combines video with authentic handwriting. And that's how we started out, and we've now broadened that out to be able to take people places where they never ordinarily would be seen. Doesn't mean they won't tour physically. In fact, strangely enough, I think the internet enhances the value of the physical appearance. Isn't
Definitely.
That odd?
I know it is odd, but I would totally agree with you. I think one really neat thing about this particular project is I know you're trying to raise $85,000. People can go to Indiegogo and donate money as low as $5 just to be a believer. And it's really fun to look at the perks down the side of the crowdfunding page for people's contributions. It goes from $5 all the way down to, I believe, $10,000. Now at $10,000, you can be in a Margaret Atwood book. And I have to say, this is very tempting for a lot of people. Can you talk a little bit about the
$10,000 to throw away? Okay, so I have characters in books that came to me in this way. They were auction items. For instance, Amanda Payne, who is in Oryx and Crake, and then has a bigger appearance in Year of the Flood. That was it was an auction item for medical people who treated victims of torture, doctors who treat victims of torture. And that was the going price. So that's how we set the price. Somebody, I think, treated Amanda Payne. They gave it to her as a gift. And you don't get to say what kind of character you're going to be. You have to sign a waiver. I'm not going to make you into a drug addict. Rebecca. In Year of the Flood, came to me through an auction, and she was quite freaked out when she acquired this because she said she's going to make me a crack addict, but I didn't. And luckily, the names I've got so far from people have been very usable.
Lucky for them.
Yeah, they've all been. I've made them into good characters, strong, but good. They're not bad people.
Margaret, I get the sense that you really are embracing technology and it's enhancing future works for you.
Well, it's part of it's certainly part of the research that I'm doing for instance, Mad Adam. And it was part of the research that I did long ago for Oryx and Craig. Some people said to me, why did you make the main character male? So it's the only one of your books in which it's a man all the way through. And I said, well, how many teenage girls do you know who would sit back to back in the same room and play video games on screen? Now, probably are some now, but at the time I wrote it, it was not typical female behavior. So I'd like to know about that. And also, in a world that is increasingly dominated by and concerned with cyber security problems, you have to know something about how all of that is going on. And by the way, you should probably cover up the camera on your computer when you're not actively using it, because somebody may be peeping Tom at you through the camera on your computer. And it's true what they say in Year of the Flood, if you can see it, it can see you.
I have quite a few friends who actually have duct tape over that very camera that you're talking about.
For that
because
very
just
reason.
Not
they don't want people to see them in their 90, I suppose.
Yeah, or less.
or whatever they're doing.
Exactly. Here on The Social Hour, Margaret, you're probably getting the sense that Amber and I love not only the internet, but the social aspect of it. How much are you using Twitter, your Facebook page on a regular basis to connect to your fans or other services?
Twitter I kind of fell into because I built a web page from the Year of the Flood. I built an entire website, and I would probably build it somewhat differently now, but it was a very interesting experience. And at the beginning of that, they said to me, well, you'll have to have a Twitter feed. And I said, what's that? So then I got a coach. I got a coach who coached me in Twitter. And I managed to upload a picture of myself. I tried a couple of others and they wouldn't load. I don't know why. And along the way, I've picked up various secondary skills like TwitPic. I know how to do that now. And just the other day, I learned how to do emoticons on Gmails.
Nice.
I never figured that out before. So it's learned by doing, but if you ask something of people on Twitter, they will tell you a lot of answers. I just got probably 100, 200 people telling me what an MT is. Do you know what an MT is, Amber?
Well,
it's
you know what?
Modified tweet.
It's yes. Modified.
I can now tell you with authority that that's what it is. So I've written two pieces on about Twitter. They're both for the New York Review of Books blog, which you can find on NY Books on Twitter, and then you can go to their website and you can find their blog. The first one was called Atwood in the Twitter Sphere, and the second one is called Deeper into the Twungle, and it's my adventures on Twitter. You do meet all kinds of people on Twitter who may not be what their pictures represent. Some people put up their feet, others their cat, others little drawings, and yet others rotating skulls. In fact, there is a character on Twitter called Rotating Skull, and the self-description is, I am a skull that rotates, and that's all we know about that person.
So you meet lots of characters. I have to say, I think you're kind of underestimating value of how many fans you have, or maybe you're just being a little modest here. But
no, I do. They sort of accumulate. I now have over 327,000.
It's amazing. And I mean, I would say too, if I were to look at people who are public figures who are using Twitter, artists, for example, that you are probably one of the best at connecting with your fans. Is this just because you are curious about other people and building connections? Has it helped your work as well in terms of inspiration?
Oh, you learn all kinds of things from them, and they will send me things that they know interest me. For instance, anytime somebody does a modified pig, or some lab meat, I know I'm going to get some references to that. They know I'm interested in cybersecurity. They know that I'm interested in odd biological things. They know that I would probably be interested in something called the 10 most horrifying Easter bunnies, you know, things like that. I also have somebody who sends me beautiful book covers from the 60s and 70s in England, and other things. For instance, there's a site called Very Short Stories, and this person is actually brilliant at it. He does extremely short stories in 140 characters. Very short stories recommended. A lot of book things, a lot of book news, a lot of library news. I was involved in a library event that was actually kicked off by Twitter, in which in Toronto they were going to close down libraries, and there was a petition about it, which I tweeted, and so many library fans in Toronto piled onto it that it crashed the site. That then became a news item, and then there were some unfortunate remarks made by certain persons in the mayor's sphere. And that went global, after which I could not walk down the street without people saying, Margaret, we recognize you.
And we want you to run for mayor. Don't forget that part.
No. There was some graffiti about that. But no, I think I would make a very bad mayor. I know my weaknesses.
Now, going back to Fanato for a second, in terms of getting people out there to support the cause, what would you say to people in terms of why they would want to be part of it? You know, is it the experiment, or is it just the capability to be able to connect with artists and people that they care about?
Okay, I think if you think of it as a pyramid, at the top there are some very well-known personalities, and for instance, music and film and TV and things like that, that other people want to connect with. And then there's a huge number of people who aren't those people at the very top, who are either in the middle, they're mid-list, or they're new creators. And they've maybe self-published a book, maybe they've got a garage band, and they don't know how to get out into the world, as it were. They don't have somebody putting a lot of money into giving them a tour. They're not at that stage yet. And So what are they going to do? They're going to do some form of virtual touring or some form of virtual presentation. When I first started, I handset my own book on a flatbed press. And then I went around to bookstores who put it on the magazine rack. So a lot of people are starting at that level, looking for places to put themselves out there. And they will be able to do this. So they will have a platform, they will have some promo that goes with it, and they will be able to make connections and archive those interactions so that people can then go and see them and what they're presenting.
Margaret, do you see this eventually? Clearly, book tours and physical autographs and people putting their arms around each other is not going to change anytime soon. But do you see 50, 75 years from now that this will be the way that artists are interacting with their fans and their community?
I think no, because we have bodies.
It's true, and, we do.
Yes, and there is, you know, live theater is a very different experience from, say, TV. It's a very different experience from film. So there is something different about that. And one of the things that's different about it is the possibility of dire accidents. You know, it's not prepackaged. So there's always a certain amount of suspense in going to a live performance. Will they make it? You know, will they make it through to the end? And just being there in the same space, there is something special about that. I don't think that's going away anytime soon. But remember, only the top level gets to do that. So how do you get up to that level if you don't, for instance, if you haven't been discovered like Lana Turner in a coffee shop, if you don't have a studio backing you, if you don't have a music label backing you, how do you do that? Some people are doing it through YouTube, and some have had quite a lot of success doing that. But some who are at the very top started quite a lot further down and put a lot of energy into putting themselves out there. Little by little, audience member by audience member, they built a following. And this is part, for me, this is part of how you can do that. That's from the creator side. From the fan side, it allows people who would not be able to go see, do, be at the event. It allows people to join events without physically traveling there, which is something they may not be able to do.
Last question for me, because I know we said we'd only take about 10 minutes of your time, and you've taken much more. But I have to ask, Margaret, is there a story behind the $150 cause for support for Fanato as far as Zombies Run? Because it kind of sticks out there.
There's a story for that. Yeah, the other thing that, of course, Fanato can do is it can take people backstage. So somebody may be doing a live concert, then you can go backstage with them, talk to them there, and get your thing signed. Zombies Run is quite a good story. I like it a lot. One of the authors of it is an accomplished novelist in her own right. Her name is Naomi Alderman, and she lives in England. And she also, as part of her way of supporting herself, is author of video games. And Zombies Run is a thing that you use as a running aid. So you put those things in your ears. What do you call them?
Headphones.
Earbuds.
Earbuds, those things. You download the game into your phone. You turn it on and you go running along, and it measures your usual speed. I said, you need to do something for me, Naomi, called Zombies Totter. I'm not going to be running. So it monitors your usual speed. And then a dispatcher comes on and says, Zombies, run, and you have to go faster than you were going, or the zombies will catch up to you and eat you. So a story is woven into that. So Naomi is now my Rolex mentee. As part of the Rolex... somebody's phone rang. So Naomi is the person that I chose to mentor for a year, and it's a really great fit because we both are interested in some odd areas, such as zombies running.
Very interesting. I think that's where I'm going to have to put my money at the $150 level just to meet her, because I am familiar with that game.
And her co-developer called Adrian Hahn. So you got to talk to both of them about Zombies Run. And then they will sign a Zombies Run game for you, and or the cover, you know, the digital picture.
Sure.
And she said up until now they've had no way of signing those things because, of course, they're online.
Well, we're at least at the time of us recording this live, we're at $1,930 of the $85,000 goal with 43 days left. That's plenty of time. Margaret, I love how you said, listen, this is an experiment. If we don't raise the money, then maybe not enough people like this idea of Fanato. But it sure seems great to me.
Yep. So it's like, remember the part in Peter Pan where it says, clap if you believe in fairies?
Yes.
Or Tinkerbell will die.
It's like that?
Like that.
So, sort of, there's a threat in there somewhere, maybe in the Zombies Run 150 donation area.
I don't know. You know, Fanato to die, you know, and flap around on the ground. that can happen too.
Well, we will see what happens, and we will definitely try to keep up to date on the progress of this. And thank you so much for coming on the show and joining us. I know it was really short notice, so really appreciate it.
And my pleasure. And next time we'll do a demo.
Yes.
Absolutely.
That would be fantastic.
Yes. I'm so glad that you want there to be a next time. Woohoo!
I want there to be a next time, but I may be crazy.
That's okay. You'd be in good company. Clearly.
Yeah, exactly.
Margaret Atwood, world-renowned author, essay critic, poet, zombie aficionado. Thank you so much for joining us. Of course, you can find out so much more about Margaret at her website, margaretatwood.ca, and at Margaret Atwood on Twitter. Those are two good places to start. Thanks again so much for joining us.
And
Thanks, Margaret.
Bye.
Bye. Amber, it was really fun to watch the chat room saying, wow, Margaret Atwood is on the Social Hour? Not that we don't get high-caliber guests all the time, but she's a particularly high-caliber.
Yes. You know, I think, like I said, I think what was so perfect about her when I was watching her tweet last night and she was talking about this was just that it has so many great components that are tied into the show. And really, she has always showed such a great interest in technology. And on Twitter, she connects in a really, really authentic way with all of her fans and really embraces all of these new tools. So a great honor to have her on. Hopefully she'll come back on. And she looked great. It was lots of fun. And I'm sorry to anyone who's watching the video. My video isn't great. I don't know why. But you know what? Hey, it lets Margaret shine, and that's what it's all about.
Yeah, her video was awesome. So maybe she was just sucking from your energy somehow.
It's the energy.
I wouldn't put it past her. It was very it was very funny to me that you mentioned Zombies Run, Amber, because that is actually an app that Leo and I recently covered on iPad Today.
Oh, cool.
And I thought I was bringing something really unique to the table, you know, because we're always trying to one-up each other. Who's got the better app that the other person hasn't seen yet? And I was saying, you're going to die. Okay, so it's this game that you run to, and there's a storyline, and it's sort of mixed in with your own music playlist that's on your iPod or, you know, your Android phone or whatever. And Leo goes, oh, no, I know it. Yeah, that's great. I love Zombies Run. I was like, oh, all right, I guess I'm the last one to know. And here we've got Margaret Atwood building it into her Fanato project. And she knows the creators.
Can I tell you that when I worked with Leo on Call for Help, the biggest reward for me was coming on the show and being able to find something that he hadn't heard of, because it was in the Web 2.0 era and he had heard of everything. Mm-hmm. So I could never find anything new. And so I would come on, and if there was one show out of 20 where he was like, wow, I hadn't heard of that, that was really cool, I won. You know, it didn't matter what the audience thought. I had won.
Yes, I know exactly what you mean. We've kind of gotten to the point now where I feel Leo will sometimes say, how do you know about this thing? I can't.
Yeah, where do you find the time?
He's at saturation point for certain things. I guess zombie games is not one of them. So
yeah, I guess
still trying to keep up with Chief Twit. Before we move on, I want to remind everybody, we've talked about it on the last couple of shows. By the time you're watching this, I will be on vacation. By the way, if we talk about anything on the show and you go, you know, it seems like they're talking about something that's a little bit outdated, please try not to hold it against us. We're shooting a couple of shows a couple of weeks ahead of time. Amber and I are both going to be going on vacation, and we didn't want to just not give you a show, so we decided to shoot a few shows ahead of time. But the week of July 9th, the July 9th is a Monday, and that's usually when we record the Social Hour at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time. But we are changing our day and time. So starting on July 13th, there won't be a show on July 9th. We will shoot a live show on July 13th at 1 p.m. Pacific time, 4 p.m. Eastern. That's a Friday, and it will be Fridays going forward. Amber and I both talked about it. We're moving around a bunch of shows at TWiT. We're starting new shows. The whole schedule, we all decided to look and see what really makes sense here. This is a good opportunity for us to put shows in a more appropriate place. And we both thought, you know, Friday kind of sounds like our thing. Mm-hmm. We often shoot shows if there's a Monday holiday or if one of us can't do it on Monday, the Friday before or after. And it seems to work out pretty well for both Amber and me. So hopefully it'll work out well for all of you. If you have any feedback about our time change, can't say that we can just change the time to something else, but we do want to know. You can write us at thesocialhour@twit.tv or write us about anything else, really. Social networking, questions, comments, tips, all that good stuff. Okay, Amber, we're going to try to cram the Margaret's conversation did go a little bit longer than we usually spend with guests, but I mean, I would talk to her as long as she would have us. So we've got quite a few stories to cram into the rest of our hour. We'll see how much we can get through. But before we get to any of that, let's quickly thank Ford for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. Have you heard about my Ford mobile smartphone app for electric vehicles? Have you? If you haven't, let me blow your mind. Okay, so you could take advantage of value charging features. It's powered by Microsoft, by the way. Based on your local utility's participation, you can allow Ford to take advantage of off-peak reduced rates from your utility without any sort of complicated setup process. You think to yourself, I don't know, you know, I'm going to lock Ford into what I pay, the phone. This is all very confusing, but it's really not. You can use Go Times to precondition your vehicle's temperature before you even get on the road, before you even get out and going, to conserve battery energy. And so that if you're the kind of person who likes cruising down the highway at 71 degrees, then you make sure that that's what the car feels like when you get in it. I love this idea. I hate being too hot on the road. I hate being too cold too, but particularly too hot for me. You can monitor charging. You can get alerts. You can find charging stations. You can plan out your drive. This is a smartphone app. Talk about smart. You can share and learn driving tips and forums. So there's a kind of fun social community element to it on the My Ford mobile website. There's even kind of like gamification in here. So if you have saved a particular amount of energy and you're kind of happy about that, you might be sitting in number one at the top of a leaderboard with achievements. This is all available to drivers of Ford electric and plug-in hybrid vehicles. And most importantly, probably, you monitor how far you drive, how much CO2 you're saving by not using gas. That's the whole point of electric, right? That is really the key here, is that this app is designed to not only help you drive more smartly, but really make a difference. That's the way that these vehicles are going. And the technology just makes sense. The My Ford mobile app makes the electric driving experience fun, makes it efficient, and it's available in the 2012 Ford Focus Electric, which is available now. You can learn more about this. I just threw a lot of information at you at Ford.com/technology. They've done an exemplary job of putting together some really good demonstrations of all the technology they have to offer in their models that you can take advantage of when you buy a Ford. Ford.com/technology. And thanks so much to Ford for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. So, Amber, have you heard that Microsoft is buying Yammer?
Yeah, I've been seeing this headline all over the place. And I have to say, in my opinion, it makes sense. It makes perfect sense. Yammer, for people who don't know, is really an internal tool that companies can use for messaging back and forth to each other. I'm working on a project right now, and they actually use Yammer to correspond within the organization. And I've really enjoyed using it. I think it's a wonderful tool. So it seems like a pretty smart fit as far as Microsoft buying it.
Yes, as of our live recording, neither company has officially announced this. That is most likely going to change, unless you're watching the live feed by the time this show gets downloaded into your podcast feeds. Then again, you never know. But the story at this point is Microsoft's buying Yammer for up to $1.2 billion. Take that, Instagram. No, it's actually very different companies. But if you're not familiar with Yammer, and you might be, you might use it at your work now. We don't use it at Twit, at least not a company-wide Yammer account. But I have used it at previous companies. And it is sort of like an internal corporate social network. Two people or 200 people can be part of Yammer. I mean, it really scales nicely so that you can be having an open dialogue with your coworkers in a social networking, almost like somewhere between an IM and a Facebook kind of a feel. As you're completing tasks and collaborating on stuff, you can share files, you can share photos. So there's very much a social network element to it. I think what Microsoft finds so attractive about Yammer, not only that a lot of companies are already using it, but it does scale well. It's not just this is for technical people who want to chat during the day. It's a very, very useful tool in the enterprise. And that's obviously what Microsoft is known for in their suite of products already. So it seems like a good fit.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's the ease of use, just being able to sign in. As soon as I signed into the tool, I understood completely how to use it. Just dead simple. So a big fan, and looks like we'll be congratulating the team over at Yammer. So
yes,
good news for them.
Absolutely. I guess we might also want to congratulate the team at Twitter. They certainly are innovating the way that our Twitter stream looks. Although the idea of expanded tweets, which means that a tweet is 140 characters, that hasn't changed. But the idea that certain accounts, certain business accounts, let's say the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, the kind of accounts that you might follow on Twitter that's not an individual, but it's a company that is sharing a variety of links to articles on a regular basis, will now be shown in line in your Twitter stream as the original tweet, but then a blurb, basically the first, not even necessarily paragraph, but two or three sentences from the article that gives you a little bit more of a sense of what you'd be clicking through to should you click on the link. Now, you could probably look at it a couple of ways. Twitter becomes a little bit more cluttered. There's a little bit of the New York Times now gets this big hunk of real estate in my feed. But then again, you get more information as to whether you're going to go ahead and click away from the Twitter feed, read something, and not apply to you, or it not be worth your time. I think I'm on board with this, Amber, even though I don't actually use the web version of Twitter that often. I use Tweetbot or Twitter for Mac when I'm on my laptop almost exclusively. So some of this evolution of Twitter is a little bit lost on me.
Yeah, I mean, I do use the web version quite a bit. So I think this is interesting. And in fact, if I probably split my time, I would say I use the web version maybe 50% of the time, which is a bit of a surprise, I think, considering I have so many different mobile devices. But I think it's neat. I mean, I think it's a small innovation. And we've had some news from Twitter recently where they seem to just be trying to change the service a little bit more rapidly than they have in the past. You know, I mentioned, I think, on a past show that Twitter has stayed the same for the past few years, more or less, but a few tweaks here and there. So I think an interesting improvement, but not a huge change.
You know, it's funny, Amber. We've talked in the past about Twitter monetizing and the ways that they're creatively trying to add promoted tweets into our streams without ruining the entire experience for everybody. And I've been a little blissfully unaware of how all that's going firsthand because I don't use the web version of Twitter. Like you, until I would say, I don't know, maybe about 6 months ago, I did use it fairly regularly. And then once I got used to Twitter for Mac, I just kind of stopped because I like that OS X program running, you know, that can hover over my tabs. But today I thought, well, you know, since we're going to be talking about promoted tweets, I'll go ahead and hang out on Twitter for that hour that I would have been in the app. And sure enough, right away there was a promoted tweet that really confused the heck out of me. It took me a minute to figure out, why is Microsoft Bing in my stream? I don't get it. And then I put two and two together and said, wow, I've just been marketed to. Interesting. Didn't bother me. Just confused me a little bit.
Yeah, that's not necessarily a good thing. But speaking of not good things, this next story is a very perplexing, I think, in some ways. And I'm a big fan of Sweden as a country. Leo and I used to always talk about Swedish design and so many things out of that country that we just really admired. I also know we have talked, Sarah, before about on the Social Hour about how they have handed over their Twitter account to different citizens of Sweden and allow them to run, I think it's a week at a time, and manage the account. But it seems to kind of have gone off the rails a little bit.
Yeah, so we've talked in the past about the Twitter account at Sweden. As Amber said, it's a rotating cast of characters, Swedish people of all walks of life, with really no censorship at all on the part of Sweden, the country, or anybody who's involved with Swedish tourism, which is sort of the whole point of this. Hey, we're a diverse group of people. We've got a lot to say. We're very interesting. You should come to Sweden. We actually got an email from Matthias out of Stockholm, who says, listen, and this is a little background in reaction to the latest person who has taken over the Sweden account, who has done a variety of controversial things, like called herself a Nazi and made insinuations to that effect. I don't even want to get too much into the details of the things that she said. But it's the kind of controversial stuff that really it goes beyond rubbing people the wrong way, and it gets into, hey, listen, we're all interested in free speech. And the account for Sweden was always meant to represent everybody. But are we going too far? Is this the sort of thing that will just backfire on the whole project? What Matthias says is the debate about however each specific tweet is okay or offensive is probably not relevant. But to have a discussion, which he wants us to do, regarding how or if you should even moderate social media. And the other question is the fact that this, of course, has given the Sweden Initiative huge attention, and many people are saying it's a success. I might add that I'm one of the Swedes that isn't amused by reading ignorant tweets from somebody representing Sweden. Would love to hear your reflections. You know, that would be my first reaction too, Amber, is even though the idea is to bring attention to Sweden and to kind of get a discussion going, and social media is so good for that sort of thing, I think if I were in Sweden, I'd say, who picked this woman? This is, it's embarrassing to me, and it makes it seem almost like a kind of a cheap shot, really.
Yeah, I mean, my assumption when they first launched this project was that Sweden would put people forward who represented the country. And in doing so, they would come up with citizens who had really interesting jobs, but that many people perhaps in that country could relate to. And I didn't think there would be so many controversial issues. And I think in this case, I think social media does need to be censored, because really this Twitter account is the brand, the image of Sweden. And I doubt people of Sweden really want that image getting out there that this woman backs. So I think in this particular case, as in many, I think you really need to be out there, and you do need to censor what people are saying and not give them the platform that they want to promote hate, because that's essentially what some of the comments within what she believes in do. So yeah, not a fan.
Yeah, it's a tough one, isn't it? It's easy to say we should all have an equal platform and an equal voice. And then somebody who is sort of representing a lot of other people, or at least for a short period of time, says things that they don't like, and then it gets really complicated. It'll be interesting to see. This story has gotten a lot of press. And again, by the time you might be watching or listening to this, it may have morphed into a whole different story overall. But at this point, since Amber and I have talked about the Sweden account, which is such a great idea, it really is forward thinking in all other ways, it's interesting to see that it's hit a snag, or at least gotten some bad publicity.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not like she said some little thing that it's controversial, like, oh, I don't like President Barack Obama or something like that, right? Yeah. I mean, from what I understand, based on her Twitter account, and I guess this is sort of the profile of maybe it's her blog where she cites her middle name as Hitler. I mean, none of this is funny. These were all, terrible crimes, and millions of people died decades ago. And I just think that I think they should pull her, find someone else.
I think you might get your wish. speaking of getting pulled, a young, 9-year-old?
She's 9, yes.
who was taking pictures of her food, got her sight yanked. What happened?
I know. So this was making the headlines recently. As you mentioned, a 9-year-old blogger, her name's Martha Payne. She goes by the blogging name Never Seconds. And she was taking photos of her food at school, and she was rating them based on their nutrition. Now, many times the meals weren't very nutritious. For example, in this particular article from the BBC, there was a meal that she put forward that had a rating at 2 out of 10. And to be honest, the meal looks absolutely horrible. I think it's a popsicle and sort of a dry-looking hamburger, and I don't know
terrible.
What else is there. It looks terrible. I mean, we can't be feeding our kids like this on a daily basis.
That's one dry burger.
One dry, and you know, a white bun. It's not as though it's like a nice whole wheat bun or anything like that. So basically what happened is her blog got more than 3 million hits, a lot of attention, and her school has... her school demanded that she wouldn't blog anymore. She wouldn't post pictures. So it's been very controversial and definitely a big story. I mean, I was so proud of her to see her blogging about all of these things and putting them out there. So I'm not sure what the school was thinking.
Yeah, so it sounds like Jamie Oliver, who is a pretty famous chef, very involved in social media, and also very, very involved in his crusade to get kids to be eating better food in schools. In fact, he's got a whole series on it. I've been watching it on Hulu, in fact.
Really good.
Picked up this story, tweeted about it, and I got a lot of awareness back to this poor girl, who is, as it sounds, taking pictures of her lunches kind of as just an ongoing project, how long it took her to finish the lunch, what was in it, rating the food. She had help from her dad putting together the website. It sounds like when the school yanked the blog, they said, there's so much attention. Cooks at our school are fearing for their safety because of the, you know, angry backlash about what looks like a really bad meal. They said, this isn't even representative of all of the stuff that we're offering, though. She's only putting up pictures of the really bad stuff, which, in a way, it's like you're already admitting that some of the food that you're serving is really terrible. But it sounds like the outcry has been so loud that she will get her blog back. And I frankly am surprised that this got all the attention that it did. Clearly, to have a celebrity chef behind your cause is really, really helpful. But at the same time, it has really become a big story as far as censoring taking pictures of school lunches that, that's not private, right?
And let's not forget the second part of the story is that she was raising money for a charity through her blog, which is a fantastic cause. The good news, like you mentioned, is that she is able to continue to keep her blog, and all the pressure did good, and she's still able to get back out there. But I think the school is just embarrassed about the food that they were feeding kids, and I'm sure this happens in schools all around the world. I think, you know, good for her, and hopefully the meals get better. She keeps blogging away.
Right, exactly. Meals need to be better, and raising money for charity was a good thing. Karsten points out in our chat that it was the town council that got the blog pulled based on the feedback from the school. So it's a very complicated matter as to how these sorts of things will be treated moving forward. But I say, let her blog.
I know.
Give her some vegetables.
I love how the first reaction is to censor it instead of saying, hey, we want to do something about the food in the school and step up and try to change things.
Right. I know. Those poor cafeteria workers, it's not as if they're putting together these meal plans. Well, I don't actually know that they're not, but I assume it's more of food comes in, you try to arrange them on a tray and give them to kids. So it's probably a lot of people feeling like they're being unfairly blamed. But it is a problem. I think we can agree on that this is the sort of thing that is a problem. So the more attention that it gets, the better people will eat. And especially
can
kids.
I just tell you, I was walking home from the playground the other day with my 3-year-old, and there was a mom in front of me with a kid who was maybe 1.5, and she was carrying this gigantic bag of Cheezies, literally like shoving Cheezies in her mouth. And I understand, you know, some people maybe aren't as educated as others about nutrition, but I do see, and I see it in my neighborhood, I see it across the country, that there's such a problem with childhood obesity, and kids are just getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and it's leading to health problems. And I think for anyone who wants to learn more about this, Sarah, like you, I really love the Jamie Oliver series. He does a really excellent job.
Agreed. Yeah, he is very passionate about it, and it shows. And there's a lot to learn from him and other people who really care about the kind of stuff that we're putting into our bodies. Moving on to something that's a little bit more cheery. How about your social tip this week, Amber?
Yeah, so this is a fun one. I stumbled across this article that talked about tips for LinkedIn. We talk about LinkedIn, you know, fairly regularly, but not maybe as constant as something like Facebook. But this is a really simple tip, and this allows you to put a video on your LinkedIn profile page. So the idea being that you can use the SlideShare app that's available within LinkedIn. You can upload your video there as the first slide, and then that will launch when people are accessing your profile. They'll be able to watch a video where you can present yourself. So it's a really great way, as the article says, to be able to make your LinkedIn profile come alive and perhaps set yourself apart from other people out there. A fun and easy tip that we'll put a link on the Social Hour to this, to the article on Social Media Examiner.
Absolutely. I love this idea. I mean, I think it depends on what line of work you're in. This might make more sense for some people than others. But for us, that's almost the best thing I can ever put on my resume is, you know what, instead of me explaining my job to you, which is kind of complicated, why don't you just look at a clip of one of my recent shows at the Social Hour, and you kind of get an idea of the kind of stuff that we do. If you were a graphic designer, you could put together some sort of a moving representation of your portfolio. The list goes on. But I love this idea.
Yeah, it's a good one. So a really, really simple tip to beef up your LinkedIn page, especially as more and more people start using LinkedIn. You really do want something where people have that wow reaction when they see your page, that it looks different and you've done something a little bit more creative as well.
Mm-hmm. I used to laugh at the resumes way back in the day when I actually saw paper resumes. It's been a while, where somebody would, you know, maybe have like a kind of a funny headshot in the upper left-hand corner next to their name and their address, and you go, look at this. But those were the resumes that stood out the most.
Of course.
So, you know, there's something to be said. You don't want to be too obnoxious, but you do want to go the extra mile.
Those are the resumes you remember. Yeah. Now, speaking of remembering things, and I didn't get a chance to see this airing for the first time, but in our hashtag of the week, I had to choose that it was NASCAR because I kept reading articles about Twitter unveiling or rolling out its first round of TV ads and promoting NASCAR in the hashtag and their brand pages as well. So I figured that was a good hashtag of the week for us this time around.
Yeah, absolutely. I wasn't able to see it either. What do you think about it being NASCAR? Of all the, I don't know, genres that could have been the first Twitter commercial. They must have put a lot of research behind it to think that it was a very, this is not just sort of a, oh, I don't know, why not? I'm sure this is very deliberate, and there were a lot of really good reasons that they thought that the most amount of people would be reached, the right people.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they had done some research into it, and I'm guessing that NASCAR fans are pretty dedicated fans as far as coming together and rallying around to their favorite race car drivers. I was a little bit surprised to hear it's NASCAR, I guess, because maybe that's not exactly the community that I communicate with on Twitter, but it's certainly, you know, I kept seeing it, and I certainly thought more and more about it, so clearly a good thing for NASCAR.
It's also an interesting way for brands to have more of a platform on some, or like Twitter. To go to twitter.com/#NASCAR really changes how hashtags can be used going forward. I mean, at this point, I use hashtags when I'm at an event. If somebody wants to filter by everyone who's talking at South by Southwest about a, you know, a certain keynote, for example. Or once in a while, I'll use a hashtag that I think is sort of funny or amusing. I try not to overdo that because I know that a lot of people do things like that. But to have an entire brand where hashtags can be corralled together so that if I actually just wanted to see a lot of information about NASCAR itself, the organization, for them to have a place on Twitter is pretty huge. And it just seems like more and more the trend that Twitter wants to work nicely with brands. We talked about expanded tweets earlier in the show in order to keep the experience as much like Twitter as possible for the millions of people who use it, but also give brands a place there too.
Yeah, definitely. And I think with hashtags, because they have become so popular, just yesterday, well, my birthday isn't for a couple of weeks, but my nephew gave me a card early because I'm not going to have a chance to see him in towards the end of the month when I actually have my birthday. But he signed his name and then he put a hashtag and he made a little joke in the hashtag. And I thought it was kind of funny because, you know, it doesn't matter what age you are. If you're familiar with Twitter, I think you started to learn more and more about hashtags, and they've become so common, not just on Twitter, but I see them used in other forms as well, on other platforms. Even, like I said, on paper cards.
Absolutely. Oh, they're everywhere. Yeah, on Instagram, I see them in funny places where I go, oh, yeah, they're doing that too. Okay, well, can't get away from the hashtags now. Reminder that we love hearing from all of you. You always help us review new products, point us to interesting new stories that are great for the show, and everything in between. You can write us at thesocialhour@twit.tv. You can leave us a voicemail at 2626-SOCIAL. That's 2626 social. Leave a message for us in our Google voicemail box. Try to keep it to 30 seconds or less. Or you can record a video, upload it somewhere, and send us the link. Just email us the link, actually, at thesocialhour@twit.tv. And we will try to feature as many of you as possible. Thanks to everybody who wrote in this week and gave us good content. And now, without further ado, rad or fad?
All right, rad or fad. So if you like to shop, Sarah, and you like flip-flops, you will really appreciate this.
Love it already.
Yeah, big flip-flop wearer over here. Bloomingdale's is now going to be letting you design your own shoes from the store window. So the idea being that you go up to an interactive display, you can design and order a pair. I think it's the Havaianas flip-flops that are so famous. And you can choose the design, the different colors as far as the soles and the straps and any decorations. After you finish your order, you can choose if you want to get the confirmation number via QR code or SMS. And that it's as simple as that. So you're shopping at the store, but you don't necessarily have to go in the store to buy it, and you get this personalized item. So I think this is rad.
I think this is rad, too. I know some people aren't big flip-flop fans because they say, it's almost like I'm barefoot. Your foot's all out there and everything.
That's why it's awesome.
I know. That's how I feel, too. It's like, it's better than slippers, and they're legal. You can just walk around all over the place with flip-flops. No, I love this idea. Flip-flops they're so simple. It's like they're a perfect customizable kind of shoe because there's not much to them, but people really care about colors and things like that. And anything that keeps me out of the store, especially for something like a flip-flop or a visit to a store, almost seems a little bit like overkill because, again, it's so simple. I am into this. Absolutely.
Yeah. And, you know, just to go a little more girly at the end of the show, I will say with Havaianas, with that type of flip-flop, and I hope I'm saying the name correctly, I have been at people's houses before. We'll have the same color, right? So I think their shoes are so common. The flip-flops are so common these days that I think that is an added reason for wanting to personalize something like that. So a big fat rad.
Big fat rad for me, too. And if you're not a flip-flop wearer, you probably know somebody who is. So this can always be a good gift. Flip-flops are beloved by many.
Can't
Maybe
go wrong.
Not all, but yes. Man. But we digress because this isn't a show about shoes. But yes, I love that. Go Bloomingdale's. You know, another thing is it keeps you out of a very expensive store. If you even have a Bloomingdale's near you, I do. And I never go because I can't get out of there for less than my paychecks, and it's just, it's not good. I can't control myself.
Well, now you can just go to the screen, order the shoes, and leave.
It's probably the cheapest thing you could get at Bloomingdale's.
It probably
is. A pair of Havaianas.
Yes.
I love it. All right, well, we have come to the end of our hour here on The Social Hour. This has been a great show. We had Margaret Atwood. We talked about NASCAR. That doesn't happen very often with Amber and me. Plus how to add videos to your LinkedIn profiles and all sorts of other good stuff. So thanks to everybody for joining us. Remember, the week of July 9th, we will not have a live show on Monday. We are moving to Fridays. The first Friday show is July 13th, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern. But you have a little bit of time to prepare for that. We just want to make sure that you know what's up so that when the time comes, you don't say, what happened to the show? And to everybody who's watching us on demand, thank you so much. Hopefully you subscribed and you don't even have to worry about any of this live stuff. Or if you do both, then we love you the very most. Until next time, I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you soon.